Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Seller Performance Solutions. I'm here with Liam McHugh coming at you from Thailand. We're both in different locations in Thailand, but we're both here by the time you hear this, see this, talking about trends we've seen, things we're worried about, concerned about, sometimes silly and stupid things we've come across, but bottom line, things to be aware of and mistakes to avoid so that the resolution process and timeline is quicker and smoother. Because when you have two sides talking past each other, whether you're dealing with catalog or compliance or policy enforcement, seller performance, really anyone at this point, if you're not understanding how confused, discombobulated, and disorganized Amazon is on the inside, then it's probably going to negatively impact the types of correspondence you send them, where you send it. We'll talk about the where piece in a moment based on a LinkedIn post I just did a few days ago. But this episode will address things to stop yourself from doing before you even start, because it will just start spinning on you. And if you plan to resolve these yourself, or if you're working with an agency and you're going through this with them, trying to help them help you, or working with people like us, stumbling out of the gate just makes this take longer, costs you more money. And the worst part may be that it adds additional confusion on the Amazon side. I know you can't control everything that happens on the Amazon side. I'll let Leah hop in and talk about some of her recent foibles in these areas, because you see lots of people coming to you like, we can't fix this. We don't know what to do.
Well, they weren't my foibles, to be fair. You just said my.
Their foibles. But isn't it often the case that if they had just kind of stopped from doing two or three things before they got to you, that they would have had much less of a mess to clean up?
Well, I mean, I work on compliance, so that is kind of just always the case. I mean, occasionally Amazon does just get it totally wrong. But I mean, for the most part, if you're being flagged for compliance reasons, it's because you're not meeting some legal requirement. And so, yeah, if they had met the legal requirement, then it wouldn't have been flagged. In terms of the appeal process, is that what you mean? Like how they're appealing it?
Well, initially they need to research and fact find and decide if they're disputing something. It begins with confusion over, is Amazon right to do this to me? Did I make a mistake? The diagnosis phase, because sometimes people are self-diagnosing in a very charitable, favorable way that Amazon will not ever agree with what they're interpreting.
Yeah, well, so the biggest thing I see with the compliance is that particularly for restricted products, there are some types of restricted product takedowns that you can appeal by fixing the listing. But that is only if the things that need to be fixed is only on the detail page and not on the product packaging or on the product itself. So if the issue is with the product itself or the issue is with the product packaging, Amazon is not giving you an appeal path. They're only giving you a dispute path. So the only way that you can get that ASIN reinstated is if Amazon got it wrong and your product and your packaging is fully compliant. And so then you can submit a dispute to say, this is incorrect, this listing should be reinstated. What they are not giving you is a path to correct your product packaging or Photoshop the product packaging to make it look like it was corrected, which I see far too often, yeah. And then appealing on that basis. What happens when you do that? And no doubt someone will chime in and say, well, I did it, nothing happened. But I see this multiple times a week. What happens if you Photoshop the product packaging to update the detail page to make it look like your product is compliant is that now you have committed what Amazon calls evasive behavior. And what they're doing now more often than not is taking down your entire account. And then not only do you have to prove that the initial product was not a restricted product and met all requirements, which in this case it would not have been, you also have to prove to them that you did not commit the evasive behavior that you did in fact commit in order to get reinstated. If the product or the packaging itself is not compliant with Amazon's policies, they now expect you to create a brand new ASIN. They don't want you to update the existing ASIN to make it look or be compliant. You're starting from scratch. And we've had a number of people, because historically they haven't enforced this maybe quite as well. And also there's just this idea of, well, this is just Amazon and not legal. Mm-hmm. Where they just update the detail page to make it look like it is in fact meeting the legal requirements, and then they are faced with a permanent deactivation.
Yeah. People have done this in droves and not faced action yet. I don't know if they assume that if it doesn't happen within 24 hours, they're scot-free. There's also just a lot of people who think they can appeal saying, look at all these other people doing it. These other people are doing it. Why are you punishing me? Well, because Amazon isn't fair. and they don't care. That's why they're punishing you and not these other people.
The only time you should be telling Amazon about what other people are doing is if you are reporting those people for abuse. There is no place in an appeal or dispute process to talk about what other people are doing on Amazon. That is just giving their investigators an immediate pass of reading the rest of whatever you had to write.
Certainly, if you're in the wrong, you're not pointing that out. I mean, if it's a true dispute where Amazon made a mistake by lumping you with other people and they shouldn't have, that's worth a dispute, of course.
I'm not saying you can't dispute it. I'm saying that you shouldn't be talking about what other people are doing in your appeal because they're going to ignore it. And I have this conversation with sellers every day where they like to show me what other sellers are doing. And I'm like, yep, that is also incorrect.
That's why I wanted to ask you. But there's this concept as well of, I think the mistake I'm seeing with the escalation lately is, oh, I did an escalation and I got rejected anyway. The problem is I didn't go high enough in the company. It's not what I sent. It's not the nature of the situation. It's that I didn't send it to Jeff. This is my guess because I'm getting all these people saying, why shouldn't I send something to Andy Jassy? I mean, escalations to S team or above executives all pretty much go to.
Right. It all goes to the same team.
Well, I mean, the only nuance being some of these execs have different direct report managers looking at the stuff. But I mean, are they performing their duties any differently? I mean, what we're seeing, and I've had other LinkedIn posts just about this, in December, they're making phone calls. They're calling people. Sometimes they say they're on the escalation team. Sometimes they say they're on the leadership teams. Yes, it's not the worst thing in the world to get a phone call from them versus absolutely no response whatsoever. But a lot of the phone calls have inaccurate information or poorly vetted information. So just like dealing with account health, when you get a call from one of these leadership team people, don't be passive. Don't sit back. Just assume that everything they give you is gold. Take it with a grain of salt and pay attention and be engaged and involved on that call.
I also push for a timeline on the call and also push for when you're going to hear from that person again, because when they call you, you have no way of getting back in touch with that person.
Right. You can't email them back. You can't call back in and request them through like account health teams. So
occasionally you can call account health. And if they know who the hell you're talking about, it may prompt the
transfer you to one of the escalation.
No, like they put a note in to call you back. And occasionally it does actually work.
That's true. But the point being, I'm not seeing enough. I mean, we see the comments on LinkedIn, but we've talked about this before in the podcast. And we've talked about it elsewhere. I'm sure when we're at the Prosper show in Vegas, we're going to be talking about this in our booth. It's not just where you send something. It's also, are you correct and accurate with your escalation? Number one. Number two is the quality of the contact, the messaging that you're sending into these people. I mean, you're saying you want to contact high ranking execs of the company. Are you sending something worthy of that and not just saying, well, we've tried to do this with seller support and it failed? I'm creating kind of a top 10 or top 5 list of the main mistakes I see in escalations, and I haven't finished that yet. But the bottom line is most of them just say, we tried going through proper channels. We hit the usual wall. No one's giving us any answers. What can you do for us now? That's not the same thing as giving them the right documents, attaching the right things.
Well, that's the thing. It's not only showing that Amazon's processes don't work. It's showing that you have done everything correctly and Amazon's processes don't work. The other side of that is most people make their escalations way too long.
Or way too short. I've been seeing some short ones like, hey, crappy experience, support's garbage. We sent you what you wanted. We got a generic message back. Please fix this. I mean, some of that can be used and maybe magnified a little bit. But the piecemeal stuff, I've also seen a return to this trend of people sending in appeals to Seller Central and asking questions. They're not there to answer your questions. That's not what the appeals process is. If you want questions answered, try to go through account health, try to go through your SAS core rep.
Sometimes you may or may not be able to answer.
Well, sometimes you can get questions answered via escalation emails and they will respond with some additional info or details, but that's not just you sending them a series of questions.
Well, and that's also once they've already delegated the escalation. That's not your first. I mean, sometimes I will include like a rhetorical question, but for emphasis. But like, yeah, that's not a, like, I don't understand what I did wrong. Can you explain it to me? And that doesn't belong in an escalation.
Right. Right. Knowing your audience, sending appropriate. I mean, just so you don't stumble right out of the gate because they won't read it. if you start off with a couple of mistakes in the first paragraph or whatever, weird stuff in the subject line, off-topic material, they're not going to continue reading it. Tons of people are sending in these escalation emails, and they're believing that they have to send the same thing multiple different places in order to just up the odds that one person reads it, takes the proper action. Sometimes you will have to send in multiple escalation emails. Yes, that's true. But this generic copy and paste, possibly helped out by ChatGPT style writing and language, that's why we're hearing from so many of these sellers. That stuff doesn't work. They're not going to take that seriously, and you're going to hurt your chances of resolving it. And I don't see that changing in 2025, the first month of the year. It looks like they're just, oh, great, I can skip this one.
I think the thing that a lot of people don't understand with their escalations is that Amazon knows that their processes has problems. So it's not just a matter of like pointing out that you had a bad experience. You really do need to point out that like the team's got this wrong. And you also need to point out the negative effect to Amazon. They don't really care about how this negatively impacts your business. But if you can talk about how it's going to affect sales on their platform and how it's going to affect potentially product safety on their platform or customer trust on their platform, that's what they care about. And so I think that's also like something that I see a lot of sellers do incorrectly, is that they focus on the like, we have 30 employees and now we're going to have to fire them unless you fix it. They don't care about any of that. But if you're like, this product makes $5 million a week on Amazon and now it's making zero money on Amazon and it's because of a mistake that one of your teams made, that is something that they may care about.
It's not that they don't care that you're laying off 35 employees, because some of them might care, but they already know that they're putting you in that position. So when you dwell on that piece to it, I mean, talk about revenue loss. Of course, that's part of any escalation, especially if it's Amazon botching something, which often is the case. But that can't be the cornerstone of your escalation. The sob story, if you want to call it that, the stress you're under, they already know that.
Well, the sob story has to be backed up by proof that you are not doing anything wrong or that you fixed whatever it is that was wrong. It can't just be a sob story.
We'll do a different episode on the stop admitting to things because you think that admitting it will resolve it faster, whether or not you're correctly admitting to something you did or didn't do. Still seeing those, still seeing people send in plans of action that no one asked for that are just widespread admissions of mistakes and guilt, and improvement plans are just pushing the burying the issue deeper because there's still all this data info floating around out there that admitting things is good. Amazon wants you to admit things and are going to let you off the hook until you admit things. And then there'll be still another episode about all the people who are just going through accepting, like, we'll relist your ASIN, but you got to admit that you did something wrong and that you fixed it. Some people are doing that just to get out of the way. And it's like, well, that could have a negative impact on your account health. This whole idea of, I tried an escalation and it didn't work, that doesn't really say anything. Think about the quality of your escalation, not just where it went. Where it went could be relevant, maybe not. It could also be what you sent. Could even be the time of day you sent it. I don't hear a lot of talk about people are sending stuff at wacky times of the day where you're almost guaranteeing that it's
going to get buried.
Going to get escalated in the wrong place, the wrong way, the wrong time. I will be in Seattle talking to some people. A lot of Amazonians agree that things are going wrong. They will sit with you and talk to you, whether at Amazon Accelerate or in person somewhere else. And they will say, yeah, I know. I've heard it from a lot of people. So they are aware of these things. It's still going to be up to you to surface them meaningfully, intelligently, and in the right way. We will revisit that soon. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, Leah, to the podcast.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.